Live event coverage recorded June 4th, 2014 at the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club meeting at the St. Petersburg Yacht Club. The speakers, Cassandra Akinu from Students for Sensible Drug Policy and Lana Beck from the Drug Free America Foundation. Live event coverage from RadioSt.Pete.com.
Lana Beck from Drug Free America Foundation and Cassandra Akinu, Students for Sensible Drug Policy. There goes the memory. It's a good thing Chandra writes everything down. The Drug Free America Foundation, it's a nonprofit organization that currently describes itself as committed to developing, promoting, and sustaining global strategies, policies, and laws that will reduce illegal drug use, drug addiction, drug-related injury, and death. It refers to harm reduction efforts. So, an interesting thing was this past February, there was a tweet, for those of you who tweet on Twitter, the official account for Drug Free America Foundation posed a question: what happens if marijuana is legalized? And unfortunately, I couldn't reproduce the graphic, but it's a large poster, and you'd think it's a perfectly reasonable question, but the poster refers to what we looked at in the 60s of drug-induced zombies, and there are a lot of misgivings on both sides of this question. Without citing any studies, the graphic claimed that legalization would not only lead to an increase in the number of teenage and adult users, but it would double or triple the total. But the biggest trigger for one of the Internet's favorites was the zombie apocalypse. On the other hand, Cassandra Akinu, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, is an international nonprofit advocacy and education organization based in Washington, D.C., and they're focused on reforming drug policy in the U.S. and internationally. In addition to working on issues that primarily affect students, many of their chapters work on local and state-level campaigns, such as marijuana deprioritization, lowest law enforcement policy, priority policies for marijuana, and decriminalization, and the promotion and celebration of the benefits of medical marijuana. And again, I think the jury is out on those questions. Interestingly enough, a recent Gallup poll showed that for the first time in U.S. history, more than half of Americans, 58%, at least on this Gallup poll, believe that marijuana should be legal. So I would like you to welcome Lana and Cassandra. Lana will go first in presenting her case, and then Cassandra, and then in the rebuttals, the closing comments, Cassandra will go first. So, Lana?
Hi, thank you for having me here. Just by a quick show of hands, who has read the ballot language in its entirety, just out of curiosity? Okay, so some have, some haven't. Good. You've probably heard that under Amendment 2, anyone at any age without parental consent could get marijuana for any condition. And if you've heard that, you've probably heard the other side say, no, that's not the case. So I'm going to talk about what is the case. Well, under Amendment 2, if you look at the definition of a qualifying patient, it does not have an age limit, nor does it have a parental consent stipulation. Is that normal? What do other states typically have? Well, I can tell you that the majority of states do have a parental consent stipulation. Some even go as far as having language in there that requires a physician to discuss the harms and the risks of using marijuana. And others even go further to say that a minor would have to have multiple physician recommendations. So Connecticut and Illinois, they won't even issue cards to anyone under 18. So you can see that many states do have these stipulations. However, our amendment does not. So what does that mean? You will probably hear that there are consent laws. And in Florida, there is some common law, and there's some statutes. But you got to remember, this is a constitutional amendment. And in this amendment, there's language that requires confidentiality. And there's also language that gives doctors immunity from civil or criminal liability. So Susan Kelsey, she's a Tallahassee attorney, well-versed in constitutional law. She says, and I quote, "The POD supporters had every chance to be clear about the critical details of the POD amendment. But now they ask voters to assume that the legislator and Florida courts will cure the loopholes in it. Where is the crystal ball? Amendment 2 is a constitutional amendment and cannot be changed by statutory law or court interpretation." So, I mean, I think we've seen firsthand here in Florida what unethical doctors can do to exploit loopholes when we had to deal with the pill mill situation. And we've worked hard to stop those criminal doctors, only to potentially be giving them another enterprise to capitalize on. But doctors aren't the only ones who are immune in Amendment 2. Amendment 2 gives immunity to the entire industry, growers, sellers, users. Now, what kind of industry do you know of that has that type of protection? I don't know of any. I mean, even Big Tobacco doesn't have that type of protection. So that raises a red flag for me. A caregiver. This amendment talks of a caregiver. I picture a caregiver as a really close family member, a home health care person. Under this amendment, a caregiver only has to be 21 to have 5 patients. So this is a big loophole, because they don't have to have medical training. They don't have to have background checks. But what they do, what they could have, or what they could be, is drug dealers, convicted felons. I mean, this is a loophole that essentially could allow for people like that to slip in. Amendment 2 has physicians can recommend. Who's a Florida physician? Well, Florida physicians can be dentists, and they can be chiropractors and podiatrists. Now, no offense to any of that group, but those aren't the doctors that are typically treating for debilitating conditions and illnesses. But they can recommend POD. The amendment also goes into any condition. Now, the other side says it's very restrictive. It lists all these conditions. But at the end of the laundry list of the conditions, it does say, and I'll read it, "Other conditions for which a physician believes that medical use of marijuana would likely outweigh the potential health risk for the patient." This is a loophole that will allow people with less serious conditions to get marijuana. Does it happen? If you look at what's going on in other states on average, less than 5% of those with cancer, HIV, AIDS, and glaucoma are marijuana users. They have a card. 90% of these folks are using for pain. And I'm not minimizing pain, but it is subjective. And pain could be headaches. Pain could be a hangnail. So again, you have to remember our pill mills. I mean, we had a handful of doctors prescribing mass amounts of powerful narcotics to people here in Florida. Could this happen with pot? Well, let's look. Has it in other states? In Arizona, 46% of patient recommendations are qualified by 10 physicians. Oregon has seen a similar circumstance. So I think you remember when people were loading up in cars from other states and driving to Florida to get their pills. It was called the Oxy Express. This amendment is not limited to Florida residents. So couldn't it be reasonable to believe that people from other states are going to load up and get in their cars to get pot? I mean, we will have a certain amount of pot tourism. Colorado does. The last point I want to make is about pot shops. This amendment allows unlimited pot shops. I mean, it doesn't have a limit. There are no zoning requirements. So essentially, if you ever heard, there are some cities in California that have more pot shops than Starbucks and McDonald's put together. This could be Florida. And zoning restrictions? No zoning restrictions. Could be next to a school or a park. Now, I understand people say there's regulations, there's going to be regulations, but we can only vote for what's in front of us. We don't know what these regulations are going to be. And you have to remember that this is a constitutional amendment. So if you regulate it where the regulations change the intent of the amendment, the regulatory agency is going to be subject to lawsuits. I mean, you can only vote for what's in front of you. And I think that if you look at Colorado, Colorado was the first to do their whole statewide program and regulate their statewide program. It didn't stop marijuana from their pot shops being diverted to 36 other states. Now, they just also went through a big audit. Denver did. Denver's a city that regulated. The audit was horrible. It talked about incomplete, inaccurate, and accessible records, lack of formal processing and policies, poor coordination between state agencies, poor management and staffing. This came right after a scathing audit of the whole state's program. And Florida is going to use Colorado as a guideline. So the bottom line is this is a massive undertaking. Pam Bondi says it's essentially, you know, the next big problem Florida is facing. I think most people are in the middle of the road. We don't want to deprive sick people of relief, but we don't want to vote in a system that could create a myriad of problems for our state and cause widespread abuse and diversion. So what's the solution? One, we do have FDA-approved medications on the market that have marijuana components in it. They're available. There's more coming. And there's clinical trials for others going on. So that medication is there. Florida legislature just passed a low THC extract bill. So it's available. People can get it in Florida. Not to mention, Florida has had an affirmative defense law for almost over 20 years that says if you have a medical need to use marijuana, you can't be prosecuted. So when you think of this amendment, and when I look at this, I think, did doctors write this? What's the Florida Medical Association's stance? They're against it. They put out a resolution against it. Doctors did not write this. And if you read the amendment, I think you will see that this is really about creating an enterprise and not about the sick. So thank you.
All for having me. I'm speaking before you all today as a leader representing Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and as the introducer already mentioned, we are an organization committed to ending counterproductive policies related to the war on drugs and using not only legislation and advocacy, but also outreach and education to the people that we do come across. I'm hoping to engage with you all in a manner allowing mutual learning and deeper understanding of just the facts. And as such, please just hear me with an unbiased ear as I let you know about this, let you know more about the state of our fellow Floridians. Now, some of us have been lied to about marijuana in general, about its positive effects and its negative effects, whether it was through deep-seated agreement with anti-pot propaganda or an assumption of its being just as similar to regular illicit substances, or a complete lack of inquiring as to what its effects are. At the end of the day, not all of us have the whole story as to what medical marijuana can do. So here it is, and it gets a bit scientific, but just bear with me, please. Each and every one of us in our bodies have what is called an endogenous cannabinoid system, and it's a physiologic system that's involved in maintaining our health by promoting homeostasis, or stabilizing our internal environment. It involves endocannabinoids, chemical compounds that our body synthesizes by itself, as well as receptors for that and other cannabinoids, including delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, the plant-derived cannabinoid. Now, when these interact with system receptors in our body, it's just like in that of other plants and animals, the medical effects that we're all here to discuss, that's when they take place. All medicine works by being a foreign substance that then enters our body, and our body recognizes it to either trigger physical processes that make us better, or it uses as a resource in those physical processes. Now, when the cannabinoid THC enters the body, it mitigates pain by reacting with cannabinoid receptors in nerves and muscles. This is how you see the therapeutic benefits for multiple sclerosis. It shows its therapeutic benefits for the mind of an Alzheimer's patient when it enters your system and blocks the enzymes that form amyloid plaques. That's the cause of brain cell death that causes Alzheimer's. And now the non-psychoactive cannabinoid known as CBD has therapeutic... have therapeutic benefits not only in the bodies of adults, but even in children suffering from seizures and Dravet syndrome, a syndrome that can cause some children to have up to 30 seizures per week. And it works with your internal system to decrease excess brain activity that causes the symptoms. Now, this is medicine from the plant form of marijuana, and it continuously and successfully treats a condition that is thought untreatable in the bodies of children, and it's a medicine that the American Academy of Pediatrics refuses to endorse, though it has shown to work. Now, some of us in Florida have also been told that medical marijuana in general is just not safe to consume. Well, we do regulate the consumption of alcohol, which at moderate levels does have some health benefits related to heart disease. But at the same time, it's an addiction rate that is above marijuana, and it's at 15%. Marijuana at 10% is also 3 times less addictive than tobacco. Now, marijuana stands apart from the approved medicines that we currently use in the fact that there essentially isn't the risk of dying. Some of us don't know that of the 36,000 people that died in 2008 from drug overdoses, over half of them were caused by prescription drugs. Studies show that marijuana has no case of death and from use in humans, none that have been substantiated by scientific study, and there's no risk of lethal overdose. So, all of us in Florida, we're about to be able to make a choice. And we can choose to either continue to deny the sick a proven, safe, natural alternative to prescription medication. And for some, there are no prescription medications that can treat the diseases that they have. We're going to continue to choose to incarcerate people and lock up the sick for finding a means to healing themselves because they live under laws that refuse a medical professional to be able to write the same thing down on a prescription slip. We know that other states have this working, and getting to deny people treatment on the basis of which state that they're in this country is not the case and cannot be the case anymore. We basically have the choice to end it, and through permitting doctors to consider medical cannabis alongside every other avenue of traditional medicine and give them all the tools to be able to make their choice on what best will help a patient, that would be the choice to heal the people who are sick and to do what they cannot because they are either sick, locked away, or dying. Thank you.
We will now have questions. I'll choose the questioners. You can direct them at either speaker or both. And they will have 2 minutes to respond each. So, questions?
I have a question of the Pat Friedman, and I'm safety president, person from Drug Free America. Given studies that have shown alcohol to be at least as likely to cause aggressive behavior and debility, and the fact that there's no age prohibition, this is a constitutional amendment that allows alcohol, I'm curious as to whether the members of Drug Free America drink alcoholic beverages, and why are you not concerned about that.
I think you're looking at two harmful substances. You have alcohol and tobacco, they're both legal. Marijuana is also a harmful substance. It's not legal. But do we legalize a substance that we know is harmful just because we have two other harmful substances that are legalized? There's consequences with alcohol, and there's consequences with tobacco. Both applies. I don't think I need to go into them because I think people pretty much know what the health consequences are with drinking and tobacco. Marijuana has its consequences too. So I don't think that we should get into splitting hairs between the differences between harmful substances just because of the legality. Again, why would we legalize a harmful substance just because we have two harmful substances already available to us?
Dave?
Dave Zucker. I've heard a lot of people speculating on both sides. It's a question for both of you. The largest tax break that we've got has been Save Our Homes in the last couple of decades. It's been estimated that 25% of sales tax comes from tourists and over 30% of the gas tax comes from tourists. Do you estimate that if this would pass, that this would be the largest tax break for citizens in the history of the state of Florida?
That's what we do at that point. But since the law doesn't determine how the actual system will be run, I can't say that just because we have an amendment, that is a slippery slope to all the negative consequences that you see in other parts of the country. Thank you.
I just, since we're talking about unintended consequences, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about some in other states. Gil Kurlikowski, the former drug czar, did say in December that 34% of high school seniors in medical marijuana states are receiving their marijuana for card members. In the first 5 years, California implemented their medical marijuana program. Their marijuana-related fatalities increased almost 100%, and that is where the alcohol driver tested positive for marijuana. And also in Colorado, just after they implemented their medical marijuana program, they saw a 45% increase in school suspensions and expulsions, where officials said that most of that was related to marijuana.
There was, in the back.
Diane Clark, first time question asker. I'm going for the sympathy vote. I have a question for both sides. We've heard a lot about pros and cons, and we know when these things happen, there's always two sides to every story. I'm asking the representative from the student from Sensible Drug Policy, what, if any, harms are associated with marijuana? And for the Drug Free America representative, what, if any, benefits are associated with marijuana?
Who wants to go first? Lana?
Oh, you want me to go first?
Yeah.
I'm
sorry. I was trying to say no to your question. Well, the research does... Can you hear me? Research does show that there are medical benefits to certain components in marijuana. And those components right now are THC and CBD, as you heard Cassandra talk about. However, those are, the benefits are strictly, research done are, that is done are just on those components. So we know that there are benefits to marijuana, and we're hoping that research continues, and it is, on other components of marijuana. And that's why these clinical trials on drugs that have these cannabinoids in them are so important, because that's what brings us the scientific data to further more research on the different cannabinoids and components in marijuana. However, right now, as the plant in its entirety, there are also components in there that are harmful. So we need to take the good ones and get rid of the bad ones, and you know that's what the scientific process helps us do.
Negative risks that are associated with marijuana. It is, when used recreationally, it is a psychotropic substance, so at very high doses, it can cause feelings of anxiety, a sense of absent-mindedness, and it is also psychologically addictive. Addiction rates are about 10% with recreational marijuana users, and that's a psychological. Physical addiction caused from like a remnant chemical in your brain, like nicotine or alcohol, or you have withdrawal, intense withdrawal symptoms that cause physical changes or physical distress. It is psychological addiction, so more over when you are reasoning, you have just some lighter symptoms like feeling uncomfortable, headaches, or a sense of irritability.
And I know that she talked about how they can extrapolate different parts of THC, parts from the plant, like THC and CBD. CBD marijuana, which is what mostly used with intense pain relief, and it's also the type used with seizures for young people that have that syndrome, or Rett syndrome, that type of marijuana, because it doesn't have THC, though, it doesn't have negative benefit, the negative... the negative effects that high THC strains would have, which is more, which are more psychological and intense, like anxiety and Alzheimer's.
Way in the back.
I think part of the problem. something. I think that we all have compassion for people who are in pain and need some help. My question is to Cassandra, how do you differentiate between the people who really need it and all the other people who drugs, you know, shop at a pharmacist or a physician to give them a prescription when they really don't need it? And now, how do you differentiate between those that are in dire need and those who are
well, the person I know at the end of the day is going to differentiate their level of pain will be that patient and their doctor. And this amendment really just gives the doctor the option to consider it alongside the other prescriptions that are pretty, that can in some cases be harmful, like oxycodone, hydrocodone, or oxycontin. And basically, if in the same way that some doctors have had the issue of not prescribing people accurately with pill mills, that's something that can happen with any drug. While we know of it as pain relief because it's a big issue in Florida, I'm not going to be able to say that doctors would accurately prescribe something for weight loss medication or for heart disease medication. They have their, you know, they're human, and sometimes they are pulled by when things like money, I would guess, with the pain relief pills to decide to go one way, giving people too many prescriptions or the other. But basically, this isn't doing anything. This amendment isn't putting anything on the table that isn't already there. Medication is medication, whether it's one substance or another. And medical marijuana is basically something that if the doctor sees that person as being able to get benefit from it more so than the risks, just like we trust them to do with every single type of treatment or illness, then it's just something that they'd be able to do alongside that. So at the end of the day, it's what the doctor and the patient are able to come together for them.
I just want to make a quick comment about that, too. You know, I think Floridians are really sensitive about this issue because of the pill mill situation, and we saw how over-prescribing became a serious problem here in our state. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me about this amendment is that, again, I want to go back to it gives doctors immunity. So I think there are some doctors, just like the unscrupulous doctors that, you know, the handful of them that were doling out these powerful pain medications, I think that there are some that might say, hey, I can give up my liability insurance that costs an astronomical amount, and I can become a pot doctor. Because a pot doctor is a lot different than your family practitioner. It's very unlikely that you're going to walk into your family doctor and say, can I get a recommendation for marijuana? You're going to have to go to a doctor, and usually they're on site right next to where the marijuana is. So it's kind of a little bit of a different circumstance than what you might think.
Last question.
I recently retired as an assistant United States attorney, so I'm well aware of the fact that the pill mills have exceeded the problem of cocaine and crack in Florida. How does this amendment strengthen law enforcement's ability to tackle that by adding yet another drug, this time a recreational drug, that can be dispensed allegedly by legitimate physicians? Thank you.
Is that for both or one?
Well, this is what I know. I know that the Denver PD spends about $500,000 a year just trying to enforce the regulations that are put out and deal with the complaints on pot shops and regulating them. So I think this is going to be a huge strain on law enforcement resources, which are already limited.
I find it hard to see on how the actual processes for the governing and regulating of dispensaries will play out, only because they're not specifically outlined in the amendment in terms of you know how many there be and things like that, because they're set to be decided by the Department of Health. So going on assumptions.
assumptions or guesses as to how it came out is something I'm not able to do purely because it's not something I can pull from what the amendment itself says. But what I do know is that the fact that the pill mills and shops have gone beyond the problem of cocaine and similar drugs as you mentioned, what I do know is that it shows that the legal status of the medicine is not the issue here because illicit drugs aren't causing that problem. But it's the system that they use, and that's something that this bill can't address.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's a mug. I'd like to present you both with mugs that are not a politician, but probably close to it. We present these mugs to our speakers for taking a chance and entering the Tiger's Den.
Thank you.
Thank both of you. And we'll wait for the Raiders. And then there'll be a little picture afterwards. Now I'm not close enough to the mic?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Closing statements.
Cassandra, you go first. Sorry about that. It's that memory thing again.
Oh. All right. One thing I would like to say in closing is that we are in a situation in Florida where our medical system has brought us to the point where we do have things like pill mills, and that is at the front of everyone's mind as the thing to avoid. At the end of the day, the fact that we still prescribe hydrocodone, oxycodone, and drugs that are highly addictive and can cause drug overdose, and we have not stopped doing that and have only tried to mitigate the negative effects of them, shows that having medical marijuana and having an alternative to these drugs that we know do not work for everyone and cannot bring pain relief for everyone and cannot be used on everyone just means that doctors will be able to finally use the full breadth of their medical knowledge to prescribe these to patients. 21 states, as well as the District of Columbia, have effective state medical marijuana laws, and half of them accomplished this with the popular vote of the people, just like we'll be doing later this year. As such, we finally have the opportunity to finally be on pace with half of our country with a medicinal practice that has brought healing to lives for, historically, over 5,000 years, and along that time has been proven in over 20,000 medical studies. Thank you.
I really want to thank you for having me here today and giving me the opportunity to talk on this important issue. It's an issue that is controversial, and there's a lot of passion about it on both sides. But I'd like to leave you with just asking if you would please read the amendment. Please take your time to read the amendment before you go and vote, because I think that if you read it and you look at what it says. Look at what it says, you will see that it is much more about creating an entire industry that has ironclad protections than it is about helping sick people. And I want to remind you that we do have a compromise here in Florida. We have several compromises. Again, we have FDA-approved medication with components that contain cannabinoids already available. There's more coming, and there's clinical trials. We have the low THC extract bill that is coming. It's on the governor's desk for signature. It's passed both the House and the Senate, and the governor said he would sign it. And we have that affirmative defense law. here in Florida that protects patients. And plus, I was at an event with the sheriff, and he says, I can guarantee we're not going and knocking on patients' doors and arresting them. We just don't have the resources to deal with marijuana. I want you to remember that this amendment was not written by doctors and that the Florida Medical Association has taken a position against it. Just please just be an informed voter. And again, thank you for having me here.
Okay, I'll represent the mugs. Thank you both for coming. Monday, June 16th, Congressman David Jolly will be entering the den, this time at the Orange Blossom. Tuesday, July 1st, Bill Edwards will be back here at the Yacht Club, and we'll be announcing the Fang and Claw winner just momentarily. Oh, usually I get all of them.
Oh, would you like all of them?
No.
Well, he was smoking pot. Yeah.
Thank you, Pat. Diane Clark.
You've been listening to live coverage of today's Suncoast Tiger Bay Club Luncheon from the St. Petersburg Yacht Club in St. Petersburg, Florida. A debate and discussion surrounding the amendment, constitutional amendment here in the state of Florida, dealing with medical marijuana. As was mentioned, in the presentation today, there was a piece in today's Tampa Bay Times worth reading regarding this same subject as well. And as you heard, coming up in the next few weeks, we'll hear from Congressman David Jolly here in Florida 13, newly elected congressman filling out the unexpired term of Congressman Bill Young. He will be on the ballot again in November, facing Libertarian Lucas Oberby, and who knows who else. But he'll be here in the Tiger's Den. That program will take place at the Orange Blossom Cafeteria on the 16th. And then Bill Edwards, local businessman, entrepreneur, and community leader here in St. Petersburg, will be presented later in the month. You can always find out about upcoming Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon presentations on our website at RadioSaintPete.com. We make an effort to bring all of these programs to you live, and then a few hours later, they are available in our RadioSaintPete.com archive. You can hear our live broadcasts as well as our archived events, both online at RadioSaintPete.com. You can also hear them on our apps, free apps for your Apple and Android audio devices, mobile devices. Just go to your Android or Apple App Store and search for Radio St. Pete and download the free app to hear Radio St. Pete on the go. So for now, we'll wish you a good afternoon from the St. Petersburg Yacht Club and the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club Luncheon, and return you to our studios. This is Joe Bordeaux. Have a great afternoon.